Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Atlantic Equities Walt Disney conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation, followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you would like to ask a question, you'll need to press star 1 on your telephone keypad. I must advise you all that the conference is being recorded today, Wednesday the 18th of January, the year 2006. I'd now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Hamilton Farber. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for dialing in today. Atlantic Equities is very pleased to be hosting a conference call for Tom Staggs, Senior EVP and CFO of the Walt Disney Company. Tom will start with the opening remarks, which will be then followed by a question and answer session. Atlantic Equities holds an overweight recommendation on Disney with a 12-month price target of $30. As consumers face ever-increasing choices for accessing media and entertainment, we see Disney as having the right brands to cut through the clutter and reach consumers, no matter what the distribution route. With long-term carriage and sports contracts, we also believe that ESPN gives the company some of the best earnings visibility in the group. Additionally, we find the company's current valuation very compelling at current levels. So with that, perhaps I could turn the call over to Tom.
Thank you very much. And thanks, everyone, for being on the call. We are actually going to report earnings in just a few weeks here, so without giving too much away, it's a nice time to have a conference call because we've got a lot of good momentum in our businesses, and we feel very good about both how we're positioned, right on point with what Hamilton was just saying, and also the current direction of the businesses and how we're doing in that regard. At our domestic parks, we actually set a attendance record for the holiday period at Walt Disney World just this past holiday, and the momentum also continues at Disneyland, where we're seeing the most resonance with our 50th anniversary celebration for our parks. And although that's a global celebration, we really see it at Disneyland in terms of the numbers there. We're also continuing to see nice momentum in ABC, our television network, and there, after a couple of very tough years in terms of ratings, we've really come on strong with a number of shows that are doing exceptionally well in the ratings, and therefore we're taking advantage of an ad market that continues to be up sort of high single digits versus the upfront market. And for those of you who didn't know, the upfront was good for us. We did about $500 million more in advertising commitments in the upfront this year than we had the previous year, and so the news there continues to be quite good. In addition, the shows that are making the biggest difference on ABC tend to be shows that we own, including Desperate Housewives and Lost, and so we'll see from that collection of shows that we own a substantial amount of profit down the road. In fact, I'd say that over the next 5 years, we should see something on the order of $1 billion of operating profit from those shows in syndication if market conditions hold similar to where they are today. Hamilton mentioned that we have brands that cut through the clutter, and I guess that the thing that I think is probably, at this point in the marketplace, least appreciated is the ability of our key brands, Disney and ESPN, to stand apart from other content that's out there, because what's really going on today in technology is that consumer choice is expanding. And that has a couple of implications. One of them is that there's just more and more opportunities out there for us to reach consumers on new platforms, et cetera. The iPod deal that we did, where our television shows are being made available for download to the iPod, is just one example of it. It's not been a giant mover in terms of the bottom line for us because the volumes aren't huge yet. But at the same time, that is an important catalyst for where the business is going overall, I think. And, you know, we've had over 1.5 million downloads of shows so far, so the numbers, are pretty encouraging. The other thing is, though, that, of course, consumers have more and more choices. And with more choices, it's important to have content and brands that are in a must-have category that are that cut through the clutter, as Hamilton said, and that consumers will seek out. And there's an important aspect to that issue of consumers seeking out content, because not only do we get their initial viewership, but with the most compelling content and brands, we find that consumers want to have an ongoing relationship with that content. And we're intrigued with the opportunities that the new technology brings us to capture some of the community around our shows in ways that we haven't been able to before. Now, the business models have yet to fully evolve in that respect, but with shows like Lost, where we have bloggers every day writing about the show, but where we're also putting out supplementary content for people to take a look at in between episodes, those are all potentially revenue opportunities down the road, but also they tend to draw people further into the show to solidify their relationship with the show, and we think that's pretty exciting. When you talk about Disney, we're talking about a brand that has considerable trust amongst families, especially mothers, and is quite appealing to kids, and I think that that type of content, again, cutting through the clutter, bodes well for our ability to remain at the forefront of that part of the business and also capitalize on the new platform growth that's going on. From a financial standpoint, we feel like the company is in exceptionally good shape. We just raised the dividend again to 27 cents. We just paid our annual dividend a couple of weeks ago. We've repurchased over $1 billion for the stock in our first fiscal quarter this year after having purchased a substantial amount in the prior year, and yet our balance sheet continues to strengthen at the same time. And so we have plenty of capital for growth and expansion. At the same time, I suspect that we will continue to return capital to shareholders even as we take advantage of those growth opportunities. So the bottom line is that I don't want to drone on forever because I want to get to Hamilton's questions, but at the end of the day, we feel very good about where the businesses are going. I did forget to mention Narnia, which is just a smash and looks to be the beginning of a franchise for us, similar to what Pirates of the Caribbean has shaped up into. And those types of Disney-branded franchises, again, are very consistent with what we want to do, which is continue to make great content that people seek out and that we can capitalize on throughout the company. And I think you should suspect that you'll see more of that there. So the studio had some very tough comparisons at the beginning of this year. But at the same time, I like the momentum and I like the lineup of the slate. So there, too, I think the trends are positive. So anyway, Hamilton, let me get to your questions before I monopolize the whole call.
No, so thanks very much, Tom. Operator, could you give instructions for the Q&A part of the call? But I will probably kick off for the first one after you give the instructions.
Certainly. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you would like to cancel your request, please press the hash sign. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question.
Great, Tom. As I said, I was going to kick off with the first question. With the certainly coming proliferation of on-demand programming, we've had the iPod deal. First of all, could you talk about where you could go from here? Do you still see yourself entering into deals with potential Google Video at some point, potential on-demand deals with the cable or satellite operators as well? For the iPod deal, would you say that has lived up to expectations so far? And what do you think the next step is?
Well, first of all, on the iPod deal, it's important to know that we're not exclusive on that platform, and we will remain platform agnostic. So I think it's reasonable to assume that provided people are able to provide, or other platforms are able to provide, a quality consumer experience and the requisite content protection, intellectual property protection, I think that we are very open-minded to other platforms, and you'll see that here in future future periods. So I do expect that other forms of other companies with on-demand products will feature some of our content in the future. I think that the iPod deal has exceeded our expectations in terms of how quickly the shows have been taken down and uplinked, or sorry, downloaded to the iPod, and the number of downloads. I mentioned over 1.5 million downloads already. And so that's ahead of what we might have expected, although we didn't know exactly what to expect, to be perfectly fair. One of the questions that we get most often is, gee, are the downloads to iPod cannibalistic to our viewership for the programs themselves? Now, we did not expect them to be cannibalistic, and they show no signs of being cannibalistic. If anything, I think that making the shows available on iPod are an uplift to the viewership. It's an opportunity for people to catch up on episodes they didn't see. It's an opportunity for people to dig deeper into the content. And all the signs that we see so far are that it's positive from a viewership standpoint. And so we're certainly pleased from that perspective. You know, I mentioned earlier, and I just want to reiterate, that we think that the Internet and new technology really provides some opportunities to connect with consumers through content in ways that we haven't before. At a recent conference, I mentioned that 20 or so years ago, people would talk about the water cooler effect. So if you had a hit show, everybody was talking about it at the water cooler the next day. Well, now people are talking about the hit shows on their blogging sites or with people through instant messaging, and they're seeking out more content, and people are creating content around the shows. The iPod deal, I think, has energized our organization and perhaps other people in the industry, but our organization certainly, to really take a look at the opportunities offered by these new capabilities. And so we're quite energized by it. So we're extremely pleased with where iPod has taken us, and I think that there's more to go from there.
That's great. I'm just wondering, if you look at some of the other deals made across the rest of the industry, I believe some of the programming has been made available for a higher price before the actual original air date. Is that something that you view as a step beyond where you wish to go at present, or is that something you might even consider?
Well, it depends on the circumstance, really. And, there's a number of considerations. The most important consideration is how to build the best consumer experience. And so what we as a company are going to try to make sure we do is focus on the consumer and focus on how the consumer wants to consume the content. And obviously, to ignore that, one would do so at their own peril, as we've seen in other examples, music being a good one. I think that the other considerations are our existing platforms of distribution. We have a set of very important partners in the affiliate television stations. And so what we would want to do is make sure that if we're going out and offering new ways for consumers to reach shows, we're doing so in a way that helps them maximize the affinity of the show and therefore helps reinforce, all the players and all our partners in the process. So the audience is first and foremost, but I think that some of those innovative ways in the we'll experiment with them, I would guess, and we'll take a look and see what it does from the standpoint of really building the affinity and the loyalty to the content.
That's great. Thanks for that. Operator, could we go to the phone for a question, please?
Certainly. You have a question from Craig Bontron of Alliance Trust. Please go ahead.
Hi there, Tom.
Hello.
Thanks for this call. It's very good. I've got three questions, essentially. I'll hit you with them all at the same time. The first one is regarding the returns you're getting on the various projects that you've done over the last few years. So if you look at the theme parks, for example, and you spent about $11 billion, I believe, for between 97 and 02 on the theme parks, and as that capex sort of comes back, you should be getting a bit more. The free cash flow should be increasing. But essentially, what we're really trying to get at is what the internal rate of return you were looking for in those projects, and what you look at, just a sort of rough idea, in the projects you're doing going forward.
Okay, do you want me to take them one at a time?
Well, yeah, that's essentially one big question.
Okay. But you're right. There was a considerable amount of investment in theme parks from 1997 to 2002. And based on where we sit today, it looks like that investment is doing exactly what we hoped it would do, which is to give us a broader base from which to run our business, to attract audiences.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't have the return on investment up to where we target. We do target a double-digit return on our invested capital for the theme park. But I think we're on track to get there in the not-too-distant future. We'll continue to see capital returns given the continuance in the environment. A shock
mm-hmm.
in the environment
mm-hmm.
changed my outlook.
Yeah, yeah.
At the same time, I think you'll see the theme parks in the double-digit return category, as I said, not too distant future.
Okay.
And I think we've got, more importantly, I think we've got a more leverageable asset base there. And I think we've gained share even in the recent downturn we saw
mm-hmm.
2 years ago. And, you know, the theme parks feel to me like a business where we enjoy a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
That I think continues out as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, yeah.
That, I think we're in good shape there.
Okay. And when you're looking at your projects, new projects, how do you, I mean, do you target any sort of rough internal rate of return on them, or?
Well, for a business like the theme parks, I think it's safe to assume that we're sort of in the, you know, low sort of double-digit kind of category
okay.
rate of return.
Okay.
It's above, arguably above our cost of capital, but we tend to set hurdle rates that are above our cost of capital in terms of the returns we look for on individual business initiatives.
Okay, okay. A couple more quick things. Firstly, just your take on the new, obviously, Desperate Housewives and Lost and the successful series and hopefully franchises that you're creating. Following the successful first series, what sort of pre-buy have you been getting on the second series? And I don't know if you've gone out as far as the third series of these franchises, just to see, and have they improved significantly on the first series now that it's an established series?
Well, the you know, we basically do a season at a time with
mm-hmm.
the shows, but they both show signs of having great legs.
Good.
And you know, that will continue for as long as we continue to deliver
yeah.
to the audience. I
yeah.
suppose. So we take nothing for granted.
Yeah.
I would say, but they are as strong as ever.
Mm-hmm.
The shows seem to have great loyal following, and so you know, we're really quite pleased with where they're going.
Okay.
So as long as the shows continue to be good, I think we'll be in good shape there.
Good. And just very quickly, finally, HDVD and Blu-ray, is there any movement on that at all?
Well, right now I would say that it looks like we are probably facing what I think is a somewhat unfortunate initial sort of battle between two competing platform types, and you know, that's an issue, or two competing standards, sorry. But I'm hopeful that will resolve itself sooner rather than later.
So then any ideas on the time frame?
Well, I think it's difficult to predict. My gut is that there's a little bit more momentum on the Blu-ray side.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, 25 companies manufacturing Blu-ray players
mm-hmm.
at this point, and so I think that bodes well. But there are movies coming out in both formats.
Right.
You know, we've backed Blu-ray, although we've said that we won't be exclusive necessarily. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think the most important thing is that we get to a point where the consumer knows which standard's
going to
be.
Yeah.
And I hope it's soon, but it's difficult for me to predict
right.
exactly when it might be.
Okay. Thanks very much, Tim.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks, Tom. If I jump in with the next question, just really sort of following on what Craig was asking about, that when you talk about moving on very soon towards getting towards double-digit return on investment for the theme parks, I mean, is this really more to do with the improving EBITDA margins that you've targeted, or do you expect to be sort of containing capital a little bit more tightly than you have in the past?
Well, I think you've seen us bring the capital down considerably, and I think you should assume that it will continue to be controlled in that regard. not because we're pitching the business. To the contrary, we continue to think that prudent investment in the business makes sense. But having put as much as we have in the theme parks, we really do have a great asset base there, and we think that we can be comfortably and meaningfully under $1 billion a year in capital, which means that, you know, we also will be returning after that investment, after tax, free cash flow in excess of $1 billion over the next, well, for the foreseeable future annually from that business. And so they'll be a net contributor of capital going forward, as they have been the last couple of years. And so it's a combination of both. But I think that the margin improvement that we are targeting does contemplate growth at the revenue line, and we're pleased with the momentum we see in that regard so far. We obviously can be impacted by economic cycles, but, you know, looking at the strength we just saw in the holiday period after having, frankly, a very strong first fiscal, fourth calendar quarter last year, I think the business is in very good shape.
Great. Perhaps I can move on to the next question, just to really do with currencies and how that might affect you. And I know you undertake quite significant hedging activity, and I was wondering basically what you might expect from the strengthening dollar and how that might actually sort of flow through to your results, and then what sort of time lag that might take. And then on the flip side, whether you would expect, I know in the past you've always said that the euro-dollar exchange rate was a gating factor in your investment in potentially buying another cruise ship. Where we have to get to before you might consider buying another cruise ship?
Well, first of all, in terms of our hedging activities, as many of you may know, we don't speculate in currencies, but we do try to look ahead and hedge our international currency flows. And the way that we do that is by looking out so that, for instance, our flows for about 12 months out, we try to have hedged pretty close to 100%. It varies, within several percentage points around 100, depending on the currency that we're talking about. But generally, we're fully hedged on that basis. And then we're progressively less hedged as we look out for several years after that, out to about 5 years. And so any impact of changes in the currencies tend to be laddered in over a period of time, and so we don't tend to see sharp impacts from a change in the dollar. Certainly, from 2001 or 2 to about the end of 2004, the dollar weakened, and we saw some benefit from that as that effect laddered into our results. Dollar strengthened somewhat. I'm not exactly sure where it'll go from here, but it seems to be trading in a bit of a range of late. And so over time, that modest move would decrease the value of our international currency flows. But I don't expect extreme volatility from it at all. But I think suffice to say that over a period of a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, you'll get the full impact of changes in the currency, reflected in the results. I haven't set a specific bogey with regard to cruise ships and an exchange rate. What I've said in the past is that we've got a great return on investment in the cruise business. It's a double-digit return business for us. We feel very good about it. There's potentially room for a third ship. We'd like to make sure that we can earn the highest return possible on that ship. We're not in a rush. We don't need to be in a rush because we've successfully carved out a niche in the business. And so I don't think we necessarily wait forever, but we're still watching to look for the most opportunistic moment to potentially increase in that business.
Great. Thanks. Operator, could we go to the phones for the next question, please?
Certainly. You have a question from Graham Hay of Blue Crest Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I was just wondering if you might share with us some perspectives on the DVD market. We've obviously had some sort of concerns show themselves in the last 12 months, and if I could put it to you that it appears as though the DVD market is saturating quite rapidly at present, and we've seen a number of studios warn on specific titles, but we've also seen a lot of discounting, at retail on some of the content. Can you just give us some perspective on what you guys are seeing in that regard, and what impacts that indeed might be having, the DVD market might indeed be having on overall box office receipts as well, to the extent that the window is shortening and people are, you know, somewhat prepared now to wait for a DVD release, you know, buy it once and watch as many times as you like, rather than spend, you know, in the, you know, range of $50 to $80 to take a family to the movies. Share some thoughts in that regard.
Yeah, I think that a couple of points on that. One, just the DVD market in particular. One of the things that we really saw over the last, you know, 6 to 12 months is that there's just been a huge proliferation in the number of titles available. In the U.S., well over 4,000 titles released last year. Bear in mind that only about 10% of those were theatrical releases. There were a great many television shows put on DVD, including a whole bunch of full season offerings. And so the category got more cluttered, to be sure. The total unit sales in DVDs was actually relatively stable year over year. Now, the implication of that is that the penetration rate of DVD players in the marketplace slowed somewhat. The growth in that penetration rate slowed somewhat. And the buys per household slowed somewhat. So we're keeping our eye on that. But at the same time, it appears in DVDs, like theatricals, that the best titles tend to cut through all that and continue to do quite well. We had very strong results from Cinderella over the holidays. Now, bear in mind, this is a movie that's 55 years old, which just reinforces to us the importance of content like that, the feature animation business, et cetera, and getting that great content that can live on well into the future. The A titles, the titles that really work, continue to do quite well. Similarly on the theatrical side, the best titles really tend to perform. So Narnia, which I mentioned earlier, with right around $270 million in domestic box office and over $500 million worldwide. And still going. So that's a demonstration to us that there's still the ability to have, especially event movies, work in all windows. Now, I think that the increasing choices that consumers have for entertainment, whether it's DVDs to play at home on systems that are increasingly attractive, home theater systems tend to be improving in terms of quality and penetration. I think that's something that the theatrical market has to contend with. We have to make sure that the theatrical experience is as good as possible. We don't think the theatrical market window is going away by any stretch of the imagination. We think it's incumbent upon us to make sure we're making the films that cause people to want to go out and see them on the big screen. It's incumbent upon theater owners to make sure that experience in the theater is as good as possible. We are, again, trying to make sure we pay close attention to the consumer, and the contraction that you've seen in the timing between theatrical release and release on home video is fundamentally a response to consumer attitudes and consumer behaviors. And so we need to continue to keep our eye on that. But I wouldn't assume that theatrical window is going away anytime soon.
Okay. So in terms of, you know, projections for growth rate for DVD and box office receipts this year, could you share with us any sort of rough estimates of how you see that playing out in those six?
Well, I think that for us, there's two factors that go into that equation. One, of course, is the underlying market dynamics. Mm-hmm. And I think that the effect of having many, many, many television shows flood the market, if you will, on DVD, mm-hmm. the impact of that should wane somewhat, I would suspect. Remember, we had lots of DVD library being released, television library being released on DVD.
Yep.
And so, you know, that perhaps could wane. I think that there's still room for growth internationally in terms of DVD and home video penetration. I'm hopeful that the next generation of DVD resolves itself relatively quickly and gives consumers another reason to take a look at purchasing more library content, which I think could have a positive impact. And so, you know, I think I'd say that the trends are a bit mixed on the just the market dynamic side for home entertainment, but I think there's still growth potential there, albeit modest.
Right.
And the other part of the equation is the slate that we or any other studio has at any particular time to release.
Sure.
I mentioned earlier that, you know, having had a relatively weak live-action slate last year, we see it in home video and television this year, and so that impacts our comparisons, especially here in this first quarter that we just completed. But, you know, at the same time, as I mentioned, the hit shows really seem to hit movies really seem to do well. We saw Cinderella do well. I think that Narnia could well end up being one of those must-own titles in home video, and so we're excited about that for spring. And, you know, we've got some great movies coming up in theatrical release and then home video shortly thereafter. The two biggest, of course, being Pirates of the Caribbean and then Cars, the Pixar Disney film that's coming out in June. So, you know, I think that as I look ahead a little bit further down the road, I'm very excited about the lineup that we'll have, and hopefully have the ability to take advantage of the modest growth in the market overall.
And just one final question, if you don't mind, on specifically on the animated genre, box office genre. How are you sort of considering the buy versus build strategy there?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm not going to say anything about conversations we have been having with other animation companies. Because, you know, we just soon have those conversations in private and let people know if there's anything to say at an appropriate point in time. But
yeah,
so I won't add anything to what we've said in the past there. But, you know, I mentioned earlier this issue of must-have content, how important it is to cutting through the clutter, et cetera. And I think it's also important to know that animation remains at the center of our creative efforts here at the Walt Disney Company, and has been one of the most important drivers of our brand over the years.
Yep.
And so you should expect that we will continue to invest in our animation capabilities. We'll continue to invest in animated films. We're actually very pleased with Chicken Little as a first step in the computer-generated animation genre. We've got a number of other projects in various stages of production, and so we'd like to continue to build on the success of Chicken Little, and I think we have a ways to go, and frankly we want to improve upon our recent track record the last 4 or 5 years, but you know, I think that you should expect that we'll continue to make that a priority for our company and an area that we think is a very important one for us to be in a leadership role on.
Okay, great, thanks for that.
Great. Operator, can we go to the line, Steve? I think we have a question.
Certainly. You have a question from Chris Middleton of Atlantic Equities. Please go ahead.
Yes, I just want to pass on a question we've just had come in by email. Tom, could you just talk about the cable network side? You know, obviously a very important part of the business. And this client would just like to ask about the makeup of the guidance for double-digit operating profit growth through 2009. Obviously, you've negotiated this long-term sports rights, but can you see anything on the horizon that can pressure margins in the cable networks business?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because I've been remiss in not talking enough about cable, because it's so important for us, and ESPN is such a valuable and important property. And the double-digit growth that you're referring to is really the double-digit growth in ESPN that we said that we think we can attain through 2009. And the reason that we have confidence in that is, as you suggest, that much of the economic model for ESPN is relatively locked in through long-term relationships with cable affiliates. Now, we do have two that are outstanding, Time Warner and Comcast, but those are moving along, and we feel good about the direction of those discussions. We have locked in significant major sports rights And those are long-term deals, as much as 8 years in that instance, and so they go well beyond that period of time. And so much of the economic model is knowable. Now, one of the most important swing factors will be the health of the ad market, especially as it relates to cable. But the signs there are relatively good, and ESPN continues to deliver a very attractive demographic, and they do so quite effectively. And that, I think, bodes well for ESPN's position in the ad market and its ability to continue to drive attractive rates and results there. We have to make sure that our ratings stay strong. Much of it is professional sports rights driven, not professional amateur, actually, I should say. College is a very big deal for us at ESPN. But also our studio shows, where we continue to do well with some of the new studio shows. I think the signs there are also good. So, you know, we feel extremely good about both where ESPN is today and where ESPN looks to be going over the next 5 years. The other thing I'd add is that ESPN has established itself a brand name, now predominantly here in the United States, that's growing outside the United States. But here in the U.S., the brand is quite strong, and so ESPN is able to leverage their platform in ways that I don't think other folks can really contemplate, whether it's the MVNO service that we're testing here this quarter, or the magazine, which has been very, very successful, or ESPN.com and the fantasy sites, et cetera. In other words, we're in the process of further establishing our relationship with sports fans, and, you know, it's that relationship that makes ESPN what it is, and we're just in a great position to do so. We've got the right content, I think we've got the right platforms, and we've also got a very good management team over there. So, you know, that side of the equation feels good. Now, I don't want to neglect Disney Channel in this conversation, because they're also an important part, not nearly as big as ESPN, but an important part of our cable business. And, you know, the Disney Channel, although they aren't advertising supported in the base channel that we are with Toon Disney here in the U.S. and in some of the international markets, Disney Channel's ad supported. But the rating story there has just been terrific. And we've got some new shows, one called The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, another more established show, That's So Raven, which continues to do really quite well across the board in the key demographics for Disney Channel. And they just seem to be doing everything in the right, taking everything in the right direction. So we'll continue to invest in programming there, which will dampen growth somewhat from their perspective. But I think that investment in programming is the right way to go, and should yield nice returns down the road.
Just a quick follow-up has just come in, Tom. Separately on the Narnia franchise, if you might remind us of the economics with Walden Media, and, you know, given the phenomenal success and maybe testament to your, you know, distribution sort of clout, as the franchise builds, is there an opportunity to renegotiate, or is the economics you know, set there for the next offerings from that business?
Well, we're very, very pleased with our partnership there with Walden Media, and they've been fantastic. And you know, they were instrumental in creating the great film that's out there. And so, you know, now we're 50-50 on Narnia, and that is for the whole set of Narnia stories, however many may be made into films. We have a modest distribution fee, and then we're 50-50 with them, and I think that's, frankly, a very good way to be. I think you should expect that will stay the way it is, and you know, we may do more with Walden in the future. They've been great partners, and really done a lot for that film. So we're pleased with that.
Great, thank you.
If I could just jump in then with another question. Just going back to the ESPN ratings, it would appear that they occasionally move around quite a bit. Could you just give an update of, you know, what the sort of current strength is at the channel,
Basically, if there are any sort of like difficult comparisons or sort of apples and oranges comparisons going forward over the next quarter.
Well, if you go back and track the ratings, the third calendar quarter, our fourth fiscal quarter last year, we actually had some tough ratings comparisons and some softness in the ratings. I think it was driven as much by what was going on in the major sports, baseball in particular, that then had some carryover effect in some of the studio shows. And then that reversed itself somewhat in this past quarter. And so I would characterize, you know, what we're seeing in the ratings as sort of normal volatility around really steady ratings overall, some growth. ESPN, as you may recall, said it, I forget exactly how many, but they had about 12 straight quarters of ratings growth. So far this first calendar quarter has started out great. We had wonderful success with the bowl game, so that obviously helped us. So you'll see some quarter-to-quarter variation based on how exciting some of the particular matchups are. But overall, I'd characterize ESPN's ratings as solid. And as I said, they continue to deliver that great demographic, you know, principally men 18 to 34, men 18 to 49. And, you know, they are the best vehicle for reaching that group. So I think that they continue to do a great job, both from a ratings and from an ad sales perspective.
Great. And if I could just move to the next question after that. Just looking at your chairman's decision to remain with you in the near term at least. Could you sort of run through what his thinking was? Have you made that public at all?
Well, I don't know how much we made public, but the story is actually very straightforward. The board, you know, deliberated on this issue and decided that with two new board members coming on. And that was effective the 1st of January. We added two great new members, John Pepper and Orrin Smith. John Pepper, formerly of P&G, Orrin Smith, who held, I think, every C-level position at Starbucks, CFO, COO, and CEO. Two people who really understand brands. They really understand consumers. Very, very good additions. But again, since we've had some change over in the board. The board dynamic was changing. The board wanted to be very deliberate about the selection of the next chairman. And so they asked Senator Mitchell if he would stay on for a time for them to sort of bring the new members on board and deliberate in earnest about the selection of the next chairman. And he agreed to do so, even though he's got other things that he's moving on to do as well afterwards. So he's agreed through next December to serve as chairman to provide for an orderly transition to the new chairman. So I think it's really great for us to have him agree to do that, and I think it's good for the board to have that transition period.
Great. And then just moving on to the current fiscal year. Now you've talked in the past about how the year is going to be weighted to the second half. And I guess that is partially you will have the effect of not having the Hong Kong opening costs, also I guess the fact that you're comping against studio entertainment in the second half of the year when you separated away from the Miramax relationship. Are there any other things going on which we should be aware of? And presumably the one-off events that happened largely at the end of fiscal 2005 would give you fairly good confidence in the latter part of 2006 in terms of growth. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, that's a good summary. One thing that I would add to what you said is that at ESPN, the structure of our affiliate deals are such that there are programming covenants which speak to the number of hours of live event programming. By and large. And the accounting rules are pretty clear on this, and that is that until we hit that level of programming hours, a certain amount of the revenue is deferred. There's no judgment as to certainty of hitting the covenants. We're quite certain of hitting the covenants, so we're not concerned in that regard. But it does take revenue that would otherwise be recognized at the beginning part of the year and move it to the latter part of the year. So since many of these contracts are new, it causes comparisons to the prior year that are more difficult than they would otherwise be. For example, there's roughly $100 million of revenue that would otherwise be recognized in Q1 at ESPN that will be recognized in the latter half of the year. And so that's one important shift. But you mentioned the studio there. The comparisons are quite tough at the beginning of the year, as you correctly pointed out. They're much easier at the latter part of the year, and so we feel confident in the relative timing in that regard. Obviously, our films need to perform, but I mentioned to you two of the important ones for summer. We also have Shaggy Dog coming out with Tim Allen, which we are pretty excited about. And so we like our slate going forward and hope to do well with it. And then you're right, we've got a higher portion of the pre-opening costs at Hong Kong that were weighted towards the latter part of the year, which we, of course, won't have this year. And hopefully we'll be having a nice summer at Hong Kong Disneyland, and that'll have a positive impact.
Right. And have you ever sort of made known how long it might take for Hong Kong Disneyland to actually sort of break even on a run rate?
You know, we haven't made any predictions on that exactly. I think that, you know, we're learning a lot in that marketplace. The recent trends in attendance have been quite encouraging, quite good. We feel very good about where that's positioned. The guest response to the product has just been fantastic. And so whenever we've seen that in the past, we know that that things turn out quite well. Now, we're just coming up on Chinese New Year. I think that's going to be an important time. Shaping up, it looks like it'll be good, but we don't know until we go through it. And so, we think that we're exactly on the right track, but we're not making any specific predictions yet until we, you know, get a little bit more experience under our belt here.
Great. And just staying with international theme parks, Euro Disney, I guess, is now consolidated, and I believe you own a 51% interest in that business, I think, through direct and indirect ownership. But given your financial structure you have with the Japanese theme parks, and I guess with Hong Kong as well, do you ever feel that you might be able to rationalize your ownership in Euro Disney at some point, given that, I guess, results have been difficult from that company for the last few years?
It's interesting because the commercial results from Disneyland Paris have been quite good. It remains the number one tourist attraction in Europe, and guests like it. It does suffer from a difficult financial structure and is a bit overburdened with debt. We took care of a big chunk of that last year with the restructuring, and hopeful that we've now put it on firm enough financial footing that it's gonna do well in the future. I don't think you should expect us to sell down our interest. It's a strategic asset for us, and it's one that I think that over time we'll do well with. The good news is the restructuring did give it additional capital to invest in rides and attractions. It had been constrained in prior years from doing so. I think that will help them going out in the future. And I think the first one that opens up is Buzz Lightyear, which has been a huge hit for us in each of the other parks in which we've opened it. And that's later this year.
Okay. And just jumping back to the studio entertainment unit. Obviously, Narnia has been a great hit for you, and I was just wondering, I believe there have been reports that the next one has been green-lighted. What's the sort of timing on that, and do you believe that you'll be able to create sequels for all of those books, given that the storyline doesn't necessarily flow from book to book?
Well, we haven't made any formal announcements on what's next. Narnia has obviously been hugely successful, and so I think it's safe to assume that it's a franchise that we look to continue to develop. But the exactly what order we might take the books in, or what's next, or how we'll go from there remains to be seen. But I think that we feel good about this being a franchise that will continue on for some time.
Okay. And if you could just following on from one of the questions put earlier on the phone,
With respect to animation and CG animation, what is the next title that you have due to release, and when is that planned for?
The next title up is Meet the Robinsons. It's next year, and we have another title coming after that called American Dog, which is 2008. So we've got a couple of projects that that are slated to come out. So we're excited about where we're taking things, but I think that, as I said to you, we want to make sure that we take it to the next level.
Yeah, I understand. Perhaps moving across to the broadcast unit and focusing more on an overall strategic question. The first question that I asked you today was to do with on-demand programming. And I guess my opening introduction, I mentioned that you have the content to cut through the clutter. When you look at the broadcast television stations, I guess there are a cross between content and distribution, and with a move away from linear programming towards ever more choices for the consumer, do you feel that in a long-term environment over the next 5-10 years that the television stations really sort of fit with your kind of content focus, as I said, given the proliferation of choices that face the consumer?
Well, I think that's a very good question. One thing to know is that over the last 10 years, a number of other folks had been snapping up television stations and had some pretty hefty multiples. And we stayed out of that activity. I didn't end up buying any stations. And one of the reasons was just our sense of, what the business looked like going forward. Now, don't take that as an overly negative comment. What I'm really saying is that the high multiples for us seemed out of line with the returns that we would want to see from business going forward. Now, station business, though, remains a very good business with high base returns, modest growth, but very strong cash flow. The other thing I think that one needs to remember is that successful local stations represent some of the strongest local programming franchises there are out there. And so I think the challenge for us and for everyone in that business is to figure out how best to really plumb the depths of that local programming expertise and platform. And I don't know that we've cracked the code on that yet. It's something that we're keeping a careful eye on. But to the extent that we feel that there isn't enough opportunity there, then we take a hard look at it. But for now, certainly, we're quite interested in the strength of those programming franchises. We've got, I think, the best management team in the business running our stations. I also think they're quite innovative. And Walter Liss, who runs the overall group, and then our collection of station managers, are very aggressive at looking at how to capitalize on the programming franchises they have, the great depth of community that they have in their local markets. And so I wouldn't count them out in terms of both their importance as programming entities and their ability to continue to show strong returns.
Great. Great, that's very helpful. I think we've probably just got time for one more question. Just looking at just following up really on some comments that made by your CEO. In the past you've been talking about this goes back to an earlier question. In the past he made comments about perhaps eliminating the window entirely between the cinema release of a film and the DVD release. Now, you mentioned you expect the window to go away altogether, but what would be the logic behind such a move, and what would be the economics behind such a move, given, as you mentioned, I've seen it mentioned that a quarter or so of revenues can be earned out of the theatrical window?
Well, again, we continue to believe the theatrical window is important. And as you mentioned, it's about a quarter of the revenues. Now, about half the revenues come from, home video
DVD at this point, and the other quarter coming from, you know, other markets, television, pay TV, that sort of thing. But so it is an important market. The comments that Bob Iger made really speak to something I mentioned earlier, and that is that we have to stay focused as an industry on the consumer and what the changing technology is doing in terms of increasing consumer opportunity. Consumers are being are learning every day that they have increasing ability to have the content they want when they want it, to consume in the way that they want it. And that's a trend that you know, I don't think anybody's going to stop anytime soon. And I think that we all have to pay attention to. And so we want to look to experimentation as to how we can continue to enhance the consumer experience. In part, that may be changes in the timing of windows. And you've already seen some of that happen. But again, it's also about, you know, the experience that's offered up at that point in time. So I think that, you know, Bob was putting, at a minimum, putting our organization on notice that we need to be bold in taking a look at how best to serve our audiences. At the same time, we have important partnerships, and, you know, it's in our interest to make sure that we do all we can to help them enhance, you know, their distribution platforms, and we plan to do that as well. So, again, though, the focus on the consumer has to be the most important consideration.
Great. Well, Tom, thanks very much indeed for your time. That's very kind indeed and very helpful. Operator, perhaps you could give me instructions for the replay.
Certainly. Thank you. For those of you wishing to hear the replay of this conference, the on-call replay number is +44 1452 550000. The reservation number is 4317817 followed by the hash sign. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.